You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here. Thanks for tuning into the show. Thanks for downloading, podcasting the show. You guys out there, you are very, very great. And I totally appreciate you. And thanks for all your accolades on the show, saying it's a good show or something that I've written. I just love it all. And this show would not be here if it wasn't for you guys. It really would not be here. And I would not be here. I wouldn't be wasting my time, you know, but you guys are great. Great. I want to thank you and welcome to the show. Another day, Wednesday. Wow. Wednesday live. Okay. When you're podcasting the show late for later, it may not be Wednesday, but anyway, it's a good show. It's going to be a good show. It's always a good show. And I'm broadcasting live out of city of Chicago, Chicago, Illinois. And it is great. It has been one of the greatest summers. I've said this in previous shows. It's been one of the greatest summers that I've ever known. It's 90 degrees, but hey, wow. Seems like it's been 90 every day. Sometimes there have been triple digits. But hey, wow, it's great. It's wonderful. I'm here near the lake, so there's always a breeze blowing in off the lake. But however, for those folks who live inland, way south and way west of Chicago, I feel for you because I know the humidity is devastating. But hey, we're going to pull through it. And if you're, a senior or something, you know, try to stay out of the heat. Try not to do too much exercise out here. I mean, that's also goes for the young, too. I mean, that's doctor's advice. Okay. All right. But you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here. I'm on Google, Amazon, you name it, I'm there because I like what I'm doing and I like the fact that you're here and all that kind of stuff. And you know what? It's just such a great day in Chicago. I'm proud to be here in Chicago. And I see we have a phone call. Let's see if we can do something with it. Okay. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Caller, Lisa.
Hello. Hi, I'm the author, Lisa.
Hello.
Moulton. Hey, how you doing?
I see you've been on a while. I see.
Well, I was a little bit confused. Well, I was a little bit confused about the time, so I just wanted to be early.
Okay. Usually, when I have guests on the show, I usually tell them to call in around 6:30 to give me a little time to kind of prepare. But since you're here already, then I guess we can just go on with it. How do you feel about that?
I'm good. I'm excited.
Okay, great. Okay, tell the audience about yourself and what do you know?
Okay, well, I live in Maryland. It's also very hot here. very miserable. I just got back from Costa Rica, and it's cooler down there than it is here. So we're suffering.
I can imagine.
Too.
Yeah.
So it's hot. So I am on today to tell everybody about my book, but my book involves a new ability that I have. So do you want me to just get into the ability and everything, or?
Yeah, just talk about your book. Give us an excerpt of your book and, you know, why you wrote it and what makes it so significant.
Okay, well, it evolved. I didn't plan on writing it. I have been a Reiki master for a long time, and I've been able to see auras for a long time. And when that happened many years ago, it just turned on. One day I was like, whoa, you know, I can see auras. So this new ability happened in the same way. I looked at somebody and I could see a hat. The hat their soul wears. And I'm like, what is this all about? I had no clue. So I started looking at family members and coworkers and everybody I could find to look at their hat to understand what it meant. And then as I was doing that,
their hat,
I decided,
H-A-T?
H-A-T. So your soul wears a hat. And that hat I use as a tool to do what I call a paranormal psychological analysis of your soul. So you may or may not be in sync with your soul. So it's going to tell me a lot about you.
Okay.
So while I was discovering what this meant, and I searched the web, I couldn't see anything that anybody did this. I thought, well, let me look at my dad's hat. He died many years ago, and I thought, I wonder if I could see his hat. So I did, and I asked for signs, and he showed me signs that, you know, it was right. And that's when the United States presidents, those on the other side, took that opportunity to come forward, and they literally demanded to be heard. Because when every time I do a reading, I'm opening a door. And I opened that door, and they came through. And I explain in my book how that all comes about. So what I figured out that they wanted was for me to write a book about all their hats. And I'm like, do you know how many presidents there are? I mean, this is a lot. But they were insistent. So I said, well, let me try it. Let me just see, you know, try a few. And I tried to approach it scientifically. I'll look at the hat. I don't want to know anything about, you know, George Washington, Lincoln. I know about them. But other presidents like, you know, William McKinley and others, I don't remember from school anything about them. So especially the ones I didn't know about, I didn't look up anything about them beforehand. I did the reading, and then I approached it looking at history to see, does it match? Is there anything in history that will match to show that the hat is correct or could apply to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I found was just astounding. So it began as a process. I developed a process for doing the readings, and then they started to give me messages. And I realized as I got more and more into it that they had an ulterior motive. It's the messages. So they have a purpose, and that's what they wanted me to write about. So I did. I did readings on all the United States presidents. Hello?
Hi, Lisa. We're having some technical difficulties here.
That's okay.
I think it's because of the heat. It's so hot.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I thought, did he not like what I was saying?
No. It doesn't matter because I invited you on the show and you kindly accepted, and I knew what you were about. I knew what you were about before you even came onto the show. So
yeah.
No, we just have, you know, this is internet radio. So, you know,
right.
Have you heard about the Delta Airlines? I mean, they were worldwide shut down because of internet problems.
Yes. And I had quite a time this past weekend in the Miami airport when they shut it down and rerouted us to the other side of the state. And instead of getting in at 6:30 in the evening, we got in at 3:30 in the morning. So, yes, I know exactly about that.
Yeah. So, you know, it breaks down. I don't think this has anything to do with that, but it was a worldwide thing that they were saying.
Yeah.
And but I think my problem here is probably the heat, or it could be, you know, I may need new equipment. Who knows? But anyway, you're back, and I'm hoping everything goes well as we progress. You're back. Try to continue to where I think I may have lost you.
Okay, so I did the readings, and it developed into a process. It took on a life of its own, and I understood in the end that it actually was far-reaching and connected a lot of dots for me that I didn't realize over the years. I'd been getting messages, and I'm not a psychic. I don't claim to be a psychic, but I get messages just like I believe everybody gets messages. It's just
okay. Let me say this, Lisa. Let me say this. Author Lisa, is that Molden?
Right,
on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Yeah, on the George Wilder Jr. Show, you're listening to the author, and she's has some great things to say about this. Let me ask a question. So you look at the hats that people wear and try to, and that allows you to look into their souls
When it started, I just saw the hat, but then as I did the book and I was doing the presidents, I see a lot more. I see outfits and scenes and animals and whatever your soul wants to show me. And they're showing me real time. And by that, I mean now. And I have a good example to tell you about that. So, and time I found is a very tricky concept where this is all, and I'm still trying to understand it all. Because some people's souls identify with hats in the past, so which may be present for them on the other side. It's very confusing. For example, I did a reading on a lady, and she wanted to know what Mark Twain's hat was. So I said, well, that sounds interesting. I'll do that. And he's fascinating. So
He's one of my favorite authors.
Oh, he was incredible. Well, she wants me to go to the Mark Twain Museum and everything, and I said that sounds great.
Okay.
So I'll look at his hat. So he comes up on his paddle boat, his steamboat, and he hops off and he grabs my arm, and we're walking. I'm like, so what's up? So he shows me a picture. On the other side, everything is telepathy. So you don't hear words. It's all feelings and telepathy on a level you can't imagine. So, I'm like, so what's up? And he shows me inside this riverboat are just tons and tons of writings. He's still writing.
You're talking about Mark Twain, right?
Mark Twain. He's still writing. Okay. And an exclusive for your show today, I'll tell you, he gave me an original Mark Twain quote, not a found quote, a quote from now that I got on July 14th, 2016. Now, I looked up, there are quotes along similar lines, but he gave me this quote and I was like, oh my gosh. So here's the quote from Mark Twain from right now.
That Hold he on. Told you.
That he told me.
That you heard.
I came out of the reading. I wrote it down. I went back into the reading because I was like, oh my gosh, I am, you know, I was just dumbfounded. I couldn't believe it. And he was so funny because I said, well, can I come back and visit you again some other time? And he waves away on his boat and he says, anytime, my dear, anytime. He's so wonderful. So his hat is the riverboat captain hat, of course. So, but his quote to me is about today. I mean, it has to do with, you know, so anyway, the quote is, a man can't walk in another man's shoes, but he can take his off and follow in his footsteps. So he's saying you can't walk in another man's shoes. You know, there's quotes about walking in another person's shoes. He says you can't walk in another man's shoes. So, yeah, that's from Mark Twain. So that's
okay.
An example.
Okay. What would you say to someone who probably would say, wow, this sounds weird. Have you ever gotten that?
It is weird. There's no doubt about it. That's why when at first I'm looking at these hats and I'm like, what does this mean? You know, what do I do with this? But I'm coming after.
Why
like
do
I
you
said,
think you?
I know why they gave it to me, because they knew I'd write the book, because they knew I'd do something with it. I think lots of people get messages, but they don't all take action. And they knew I would. So they gave it to me. Because they knew. And then
find this fascinating.
Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, I'm talking to their soul on the other side. And I feel things, I feel their emotions. The things I've learned, the telepathy. It's not just a telepathy of the mind. It's a telepathy of all your senses.
Yes.
So it's things I can't even describe, really. And I'm doing the first ladies now, and they are fascinating.
Okay, what is the name of the book?
Presidential Souls. And
Presidential
I have a website.
Souls. And where can we find it?
Presidential Souls.
Where can we find it? Is it on?
It's on Amazon. It's on most of the.
Is it on Amazon? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. How does this fit in with helping other people out here? How do you use what you know? You say you're not a psychic, but you're using hats to look into other people's soul. How would you uplift somebody's life in that manner if you knew somebody was in need of a transformation in their lives from maybe a negative to positive? How would you motivate someone using that kind of thing that
well,
you do?
Well, I'll give you an example. I have one older sister, and I looked at her hat. Hers was one of the first I looked at, and I thought, well, this has to be wrong, because obviously I know her and I know her very well, and I'm like, okay, this has to be wrong. So I told her what her hat was, and she said this was a desire, a secret desire that she never told anybody. Her hat was an opera singer, and I said, your soul wants to sing. And she says, I can't sing. And she, you know, pretends to sing at church and, you know, moves her mouth, but doesn't sing. And she says, I can't sing, but if I could be anything in the world, I'd be a singer. She's not in sync with her soul. And I did a reading on a couple, a lady who wanted to check out her possible mate. And they are a very good match. They are a very good match.
Yeah.
They complement each other. I have a couple of other family members, that I've always had difficulty with. And now that I see their hat and I understand them, I might not agree with them, but I definitely understand them and why we don't get along. And that applies to coworkers. I've looked at, you know, people. so I can get a better understanding of who they are. And especially if you're not in sync with your soul, then you'll probably, you know, have issues because you're not doing what your soul loves to do. I work with somebody, I did a reading on her, and her soul dances and sings and plays instruments. And my message to her was, you need to dance to your own tune and not other people's. And because she listens to everybody else but herself, and she's not happy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree with her, with you on that. I mean, a lot of people out here are doing that. They're not living their lives. They're living their lives the way others want them to live their lives. And that's, you know,
exactly. Not good. And wouldn't it be great to know what your soul wants you, what your soul identifies with? And I did a reading on one lady. Their soul showed me three different versions of themselves, what they are, where they're going, and what their soul wants them to be. It was really interesting reading. So it helps you know and maybe get in touch with your own soul to understand. And that's with this book, they want you to look at the presidents. There's only one past president on the other side who's a dark soul, and he's really terrible. Okay. And I don't do dark souls. If I open that door and it's a dark soul, it's absolutely terrifying. I slam the door shut. So there's one.
There's things you won't go.
Oh, my God. I had nightmares for 2 days. I mean, it was absolutely terrifying. So I can't do that one. That's just terrifying. So
okay, give everybody,
I don't know. Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, give everybody your website again so they can get a clear, have a clear path in finding you.
Sure. It's presidentialsouls.com. Mm-hmm. It's a WordPress site.
Okay. It's very, very simple. Are you thinking about doing another book?
Yes. I'm working on the First Ladies right now, First Lady Souls.
Okay. So you've done the presidents. Yeah. Okay.
Now I'm going to do, well, they wanted me to, and they're really great.
All right. You can find her book. I was going to say, you can find her book also on Amazon.com.
Yes. And there's some other links on my website that you can get it elsewhere, but you can definitely find it on Amazon.
I want to say something. Are there any, I'm not sure because I haven't done this type of research before. Are there any other books on the market similar to the one that you've just written?
I've tried to look to see if anybody else sees hats and I can't find anything. I mean, there might be people out there, but there's not a whole lot on hats, let me tell you.
Wow, you have been just great. I mean, I've learned something. I didn't know hats could be so that you can look into somebody's soul with a hat. Maybe you're the only one with that gift. You ever thought about that?
Maybe like you know? I said, I listen. I mean, this whole thing came about because Abraham Lincoln started haunting me, and he's stomping around the house and he's banging things and shaking the bed at night. And I'm like, what do you want? I know you're there, but what do you want? Yes. Cause I'm like, no, this cannot be. And as soon as I finished the manuscript, I went to dinner. It was my daughter's birthday. I'm like, oh, you know, it's at the publisher. Okay. Now I can just sit back. So I'm taking pictures at the restaurant of the waitress trying to make some Cherry's Jubilee. And what do I get a picture of? George Washington, full figure apparition. Now, I sent this picture to, I don't know if you know who he is, but Joshua Warren. And he does a podcast, Speaking of Strange. He's been on Coast to Coast AM. He had his experts tear that picture apart pixel by pixel. And he said, that is a ghost. And you can kind of see the powdered wig and the lapels. So I asked George, I said, why'd you show up? What's going on here? And he said, he wanted to show people that we're really here and we really want you to hear what they have to say. Hmm. And that it's on my that picture is on my website too. He said, so people see us. They want people to know that they are real. Because I was like, holy cow. Yeah. Oh, and another thing. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to give it away. But one of the first readers, something in the book that I say, and one of the first readers read the book and called me. This was my niece. She had ordered the book right away. She read it, and she had a major paranormal experience. Wow. And I said, well, I'm not surprised. She's never had a paranormal experience, okay? But, I'll give it away. They wanted me to put in the book, in the last line, their final message was to let you know that they were with you when you read this book.
And wow, that's dramatic.
She said she was reading the book one night. Now, she's all alone. There's nobody else, you know. And she said she woke up and somebody was laying in the bed next to her. And then they started pulling the covers off. And there was nobody there.
Wow.
I said, well, yeah, because they wanted you to tell me so I could tell everybody. They are really with you. And they made that very clear.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. That's dramatic. And, you know, that's awesome. You know, and that's why I asked you. That's why I asked you to make sure you give the website and the Amazon address to your book, because it sounds like people should read it.
Yes, they need to read it. And I did not intend it to be political in any way, shape, or form, but what came out is from them.
Okay. All right.
That's the
Lisa
truth.
Malden.
Lisa
Malden, thanks for being on my show. Another thing I want to ask you, would you like a link to this show so you can put this link on your website and the people
Absolutely.
Who are curious
about it? Absolutely. I've been
telling
everybody. Yeah.
Put it on your website and you know, for those who are curious, they can come to your website and listen to you on this show and they can get more insight into what you do.
Okay, because I know it is confusing. When I tell people, they're like, they do exactly what you did. They spell it HATS, hats. Are you talking about hats?
Yeah. Yes. I had to be sure. I wasn't sure. HATS.
I know.
Hats? Because I have a lot of hats around here. So you could probably read it to myself.
Do you want to know what your hat is? Do you want to know your hat?
You would have to see my hat, view it, and touch it, wouldn't you?
Nope. No, you don't have to be there. In fact, when I do readings, I don't want to know anything about you. I tell people, just email me your first name. That's all I want. Because the less I know about you, the easier it is. Because I don't have any.
Okay, the next time you're on the show, then I'll allow you to do it because we're running out of time.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for being on the show.
It's been great.
You were fun.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
No problem. That was Lisa Malden on the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. We will be right back, folks.
This is the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Okay, all righty. We're back. We are back. That was fun. That was Lisa Malden. If you're into that kind of thing, and you know, so you check out her work. She sounds like a pretty, pretty nice lady. All right, we're going to be in City of Chicago. They're having a police summit. Eddie Johnson, the police superintendent of Chicago, what can be done about violence?
This is an ABC News special report. Now reporting, George Stephanopoulos.
And we are coming back on the air right now because we are told that the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, will appear momentarily right there at the Justice Department. Of course, she is going to speak on that.
Wow, it is totally hot in the City of Chicago. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I was just talking about the Justice Department doing a report on the Baltimore police. And they are saying some scathing things. In case you missed it, the Justice Department formally released a damning report on Wednesday detailing the routine abuse inflicted on Baltimore residents by the city's police department. And I was saying that they can probably translate that over to the Chicago Police Department too, because these people don't seem to know how the police officers do not seem to know how not to draw their guns. And I was just speaking about this 73-year-old woman who was shot point blank by another officer. I got this across my desk, and he shot her point blank. And they're saying that it was an accident, that it was a training that went wrong. And they're trying to find out how the real live rounds get into a gun that was supposed to be loaded with blanks. So they're investigating that now. And I was also saying it doesn't matter whether it was blanks or live. This police officer, this is another police shooting within the United States, another police shooting. And that's wrong. That's not right. And it should not, you know, it should not. It just behooves me that so much police brutality out here, and it's on tape. It's on video. And it's just awesome. It's just awesome. And I talked about if I wasn't cut off, I also talked about the solving of the solutions to some of the crime in the City of Chicago, because they're giving a summit. I talked about that. They're giving a summit, the police and the mayor. They're having a summit on Chicago's rising crime. And I would love to be a part of that. I really would, because I would go in there with all kinds of solutions that they can't seem to come up with to solve the problems of violence in the City of Chicago. Because this show is all about making the world a better place one show at a time. They just can't seem to come up with solutions. That's why the criminals are taking over Chicago, because they know that the mayor, the governor, the police superintendent, they can't seem to come up with solutions to solve the crime problem in the City of Chicago. They can arrest people. They can take guns off the street. But the more guns they take off the street, the more guns there are on the street. Remember, this is a conceal and carry town. A lot of the gun crimes in the city files by lawful people carrying legal guns, not illegal, but legal guns. And the police department, these people are getting paid so much goddamn money, and they can't seem to solve the crimes, the ongoing rising crime in the City of Chicago. They got to call other people from other states to come in to try to help. What they need to do is call in those folks from New York and Los Angeles who have some of the lowest crime rates in America. And Chicago has the highest. Talk to those folks. Get some ideas from them on how they're lowering crime. And then put those things to work in Chicago. That's how I feel about it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. Thanks. Thank you very much.
This is an ABC News special report. Now reporting, George Stephanopoulos.
And we are coming back on the air right now because we are told that the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, will appear momentarily right there at the Justice Department. Of course, she is going to speak on that horrific shooting overnight in Dallas when at least one sniper targeted police officers, attacking 14 of them, killing five, injuring seven police officers, two civilians injured as well last night in Dallas. There is a shooter identified, Micah Xavier Johnson, 25 years old, an Army reservist from Mesquite, Texas. He was killed by police after several hours of negotiations. Three other suspects are now in custody as well, but officials in Dallas not saying much about why those suspects are in custody, what they are saying. They are saying that the suspects are being tight-lipped and law enforcement officials being tight-lipped about that. As well, I want to go to Matt Gutman, who is on the scene in Dallas right now. The entire city right now, an active crime scene.
Exactly, George. I mean, the crime scene itself probably spans about 20 square blocks, and we just walked over there to survey the area, and there are literally dozens of crime scene and evidence cones scattered about this area. Cops are everywhere. There are officers on every single street corner, and we got to see the spot where apparently the C4 explosives were used to neutralize that sniper on the second story of El Centro College. The blast so powerful there not only shattered the windows of that building, but shattered the windows across the street as well. And right beneath that shooting gallery where they're apparently sniping at officers are at least two squad cars shot to pieces, and at least one of the officers was killed in those squad cars. And we saw bullet casings and bullet holes from that alleged sniper at least 100 yards away. So this is a massive crime scene, and officers, the FBI, ATF, others are still meticulously trying to comb through it and figure out what happened. And one officer with whom I spoke said this is the first time that she's actually been afraid to come to work because she doesn't know who else is out there.
Well, who else is out there? That the police chief made that point as well. Also, Micah Johnson had said that he had planted explosives around the site as well. But so far, police have found nothing, correct?
No, they found nothing so far that we've been able to tell. But the officers with whom I spoke said that what they have seen, the video they've seen of this alleged shooter, he seemed to walk around and move very tactically like he was militarily trained. And, of course, we've now learned that Johnson was a military reservist. But so far, we've understood that they have found no explosives at the scene of the crime, George.
Pierre Thomas, you cover the Justice Department, our senior justice correspondent. The Attorney General has now delayed the statement a couple of times this morning. This is quite personal to her as well.
Exactly, George. She wants to express great support for law enforcement in this time of sorrow. And also she knows this comes against the backdrop of those fatal police shootings involving men of color. So she's got to thread the needle today to talk about both these scenarios, but she will be talking about the support that the FBI and other law enforcement agencies at the federal level will be giving the Dallas PD to help them solve this. And again, they still have a situation where they have the name and ID of the deceased suspect, but you also have to make sure that he has no associates or anyone else who was willing to help him. These three suspects, we yet don't know if they will be charged. They could have been just caught up in this, and it's a fluid situation, and they could be released. These situations are fluid. That often happens. But the fact that they were tight-lipped gives law enforcement some pause, and believe me, no one's going anywhere until law enforcement knows everything they feel like they need to know.
Can't take any chances with that. The Attorney General not expected to take any questions. Pierre, any possible concrete policy announcements today?
Well, one of the things I'm looking for is whether she announces whether this is going to be a civil rights investigation. If you take the suspect at his word that he killed police officers because they were white or that he wanted to kill, quote, white people, that is an avenue that she can pursue. Again, there are so many things that remain fluid here, but I think the Attorney General wants to speak to the nation in part because she realizes that this is a pivotal moment, that this is a week that many hope we would never see, but we're yet having it again.
John Carl at the White House. The president has already spoken out twice in the last 24 hours on these shootings. First, the shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota, and early this morning on the shootings in Dallas as well. He's overseas on what was supposed to be a several-day trip. Any indication yet on whether those plans are changing?
There's active consideration to cutting that trip short, George. No decision has been made. But you heard in the president's words about the shooting in Dallas, calling it vicious, calculated, despicable. And now we hear from the attorney general.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for being here today. Last night, at least 5 police officers were shot and killed. Several more were injured, along with 2 civilians, as they sought to protect a peaceful protest in Dallas, Texas. Our thoughts and our prayers and condolences go out to the families of those who have lost loved ones. The Department of Justice, including the FBI, ATF, the U.S. Marshals Service, and the U.S. Attorney's Office on the scene, is working closely with our state and local counterparts, and we intend to provide any assistance that we can to investigate this attack and also to help heal a community that has been severely shaken and deeply scarred by an unfathomable tragedy. This is an unfolding situation. We'll be providing additional information when it is available and appropriate. But more so, this has been a week of profound grief and heartbreaking loss. The peaceful protest that was planned in Dallas last night was organized in response to the tragic deaths of Alton Sterling in Louisiana and Philando Castile in Minnesota. Now, we've opened a civil rights investigation in Louisiana, and we're providing assistance to local authorities in Minnesota who are leading the investigation there. And today, we are feeling the devastating loss of Dallas area Rapid Transit Officer Brent Thompson and 4 other fallen officers whose names remain unreleased as we await notification to all of the families. Now, after the events of this week, Americans across our country are feeling a sense of helplessness, of uncertainty, and of fear. Now, these feelings are understandable and they are justified, but the answer must not be violence. The answer is never violence. Rather, the answer, our answer, all our answer, must be action. Calm, peaceful, collaborative, and determined action. We must continue working to build trust between communities and law enforcement. We must continue working to guarantee every person in this country equal justice under the law. And we must take a hard look at the ease with which wrongdoers can get their hands on deadly weapons and the frequency with which they use them. And we must reflect on the kind of country that we want to build and the kind of society that we are choosing to pass on to our children. And above all, we must reject the easy impulses of bitterness and rancor and embrace the difficult work, but the important work, the vital work, of finding a path forward together. And above everything, we must remind ourselves that we're all Americans, and that as Americans, we share not just a common land, but a common life, not just common goals, but a common heart and soul. And those we've lost this week have come from different backgrounds, different neighborhoods, but today they're mourned by officers, by residents, by family and friends, by men and women and children who loved them, who needed them, and who will miss them always. They are mourned by all of us. To the families of all who've lost their lives in this series of tragedies, we share your pain and your loss. To our brothers and sisters who wear the badge, I want you to know that I am deeply grateful for the difficult and dangerous work that you do every day to keep our streets safe and our nation secure. Our hearts are broken by this loss, and the Department of Justice will do all that we can to support you in the days ahead. And to those who seek to improve our country through peaceful protest and protected speech, I want you to know that your voice is important. Do not be discouraged by those who would use your lawful actions as a cover for their heinous violence. We will continue to safeguard your constitutional rights and to work with you in the difficult mission of building a better nation and a brighter future. And to all Americans, I ask you, I implore you, do not let this week precipitate a new normal in this country. I ask you to turn to each other, not against each other, as we move forward. Let us support one another. Let us help heal one another. And I urge you to remember, today and every day, that we are one nation, we are one people, and we stand together. May God bless the families and the loved ones of all who were taken from us this week and comfort their grief with his everlasting grace. And may God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
There goes the Attorney General. A plea for understanding, healing from the Attorney General right there, speaking of what she called the sense of helplessness, uncertainty, and fear all across the United States right now. And Sunny Hostin is here with me, our senior legal correspondent. I'm sure those words hit home in so many homes today. Helplessness, uncertainty, fear.
They did. And what struck me was that there was a call for collaboration, collaborative action. There was a call for trust between police and communities, and that this is an American problem. And I think that's very important, because I think we've seen over the past few days selective outrage. There should be outrage across all of America for all of the lives lost. And so I think that was very clear in her message to the American people. I also think, George, it's important to note that she's the Attorney General. She is the top law enforcement officer for our country. And she's also was a top prosecutor here in the Eastern District of New York. I interviewed with Loretta Lynch. And so she's a career prosecutor and someone that works with law enforcement officers day in and day out. And so I think her message.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, they're saying that a woman was strip searched, that some woman somewhere was strip searched over a broken taillight. If that's true, this is some more of police officers not using discretion. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, Donald Trump, Secret Service pays Donald Trump a visit. They should have been paying Donald Trump a visit a long time ago, because this is not the first time, nor will be the last time, that he incites violence. Now he's saying that his words were taken out of context. His words were misconstrued when he basically used the Second Amendment to most people feel to have Clinton killed, Hillary Clinton killed. And he's saying that he didn't do, people took his words out of context and the media is after him and all of that. But I do know one thing. This is not the first time that he has done this.
You're all watching right. The Breakfast Club.
Donald Trump. Okay.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
That's right.
Dr. Umar Johnson.
Peace
my
and
brother.
Love. Peace. Peace and love, family. Bro? All is well. Glad to be back.
Now let's get right to it, man. In light of everything that's going on, what are the solutions? We've discussed the problem so much. What are the solutions?
All right. Before I state the solution, I would have to challenge you on that. Because although we talk about the problems a lot of people don't understand how the problem operates.
Gotcha.
Let me give you an example. Take miseducation.
Okay.
People know the children aren't learning. They know black boys are not graduating. They know special ed is an issue. They know ADHD is a problem. But they don't know how this operates.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand how the child goes from the classroom into the special education system.
Okay.
So they have to be taught how it operates. You follow? So we understand that police genocide is a problem in the black community. We understand that structural inequality, disproportionality, i.e. racism, is a problem. But do we understand how racism operates? So I think that once you understand how the problem operates and manifests itself, you're now in a position to solve it.
Mm.
Someone comes to me for therapy. Before I do any therapy, what I do, a clinical history. Is there depression in your family? Have you been depressed before? Have you ever contemplated suicide? So I have to understand your background and how you've been living your life in order to solve your current everyday problems. So now, coming to the present, what we're seeing going on around the country. Let's be honest. Africans were brought to America to serve. We're no longer necessary for the American economic order to operate. They don't need us to function. That explains the purging. That explains the ethnic cleansing.
Even with all these Negroes making money?
Well, remember now, when you look at the black folks who are rich, they are a small percentage of the general body politic of the community. You understand? 85% of black folks are struggling. Half of our children grow up in poverty. Most of our single-parent black mothers are poor, even with a burgeoning rate of black women earning their college degrees.
Mm.
So simply put, black America is suffering despite the television projection of success. Yes, we are more educated than ever before. We have the bachelor's, we have the master's, we have the doctorates. But that education has not taken place alongside an increase in wealth acquisition. We're smarter, but we still don't own anything.
But we know we're poor. We know some of us are not well educated. We know some of us have a lot of problems due to where we're growing up in our environment.
Yes.
But besides all of that, we got a bigger problem with racism. It's the way that other people look at us.
I agree.
You know what I mean? But I'm not saying it's right, but the way we look at ourselves is bad, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because if I'm walking down the street and I see some brothers with some hoods on, it makes me think twice.
Right.
So if it makes me think twice, I know it's going to make somebody else think twice, but it doesn't give us doesn't give them the right to put a
gun. But that's based off your experiences, though.
But like, it is based off my experience.
It's also based off conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The conditioning is critical. Media is critical to the social agenda of any country. You understand? You take Adolf Hitler. Before he did what he did in Germany, he conducted a media campaign that sought to destroy the image of a European Jew in the German mind before the physical Holocaust began.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in America. Before you begin taking the black life, you must kill the image of the black life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at gangster rap, which plays a hand in it, okay, when you look at the way in which we're portrayed in movies, when you look at the way in which we're portrayed on the radio, popular media, magazines, it is in a very negative way as if to say these people, the world would be better off without these people.
That's why so they once release people criminal records when
exactly,
they kill them.
Exactly. Good. In other words, it's not so bad that he died because he went to jail anyway. Mm-hmm. So you have to kill the image before you kill the person. Why? Because people will take up for people who are unjustly treated. But if you can convince the world that we would be better off without these people by killing their image, then when the physical carnage begins, no one will care.
How do we change that, though? How do we change the way that America looks at African-Americans, and how do we change the fact that these racist individuals, racist police officers stop pulling out the gun? See, I think it's you have to penalize them. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, it's kind of like a kid. You know, your kid does something bad, and you say, okay, it's okay, he's going to continue to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you bust his ass, next time he's thinking about doing it, he's going to be like, well, you know what, my pops is going to bust my ass. I feel like the police officers that kill African-Americans, just kill people in general, they don't get penalized for it.
I agree with it. You're absolutely correct. For example, behavioral psychology, two basic laws is what? All behavior is a function mm-hmm. of the context in which it takes place. The American racial hierarchy, it's a function of the context. And then it's a function of the consequences. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You follow? Mm-hmm. So in other words, behavior never stands still. Whether it's you, whether it's a child, whether it's a country, whether it's the police. Behavior is always getting worse
right.
or it's always getting better. So when Zimmerman wasn't punished for Trayvon,
right.
that automatically created a context
absolutely.
For it to happen again. Right. Do you understand? Walter Scott, Tamir Rice, it creates a context.
Michael
so the
Brown.
Next police officer yeah. says, well, wait a minute. I can be a little bit more trigger happy because the last five black men and women, Sandra Bland, who were murdered by police, were not held accountable. So when you do nothing about misbehavior, mm-hmm. then you're actually supporting its repeating
now,
itself.
Now, what do protests do? Because people protest and they say, mm-hmm. you know, and I love the unity, and I love the unity of African-American people. I wish we could be more unified when it's not just a brother dying. But I feel like sometimes the protest, what is it getting accomplished?
Okay.
You know? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, you protest, you shut down a highway, there's an ambulance that's trying to get somebody to a hospital, that person dies in the ambulance. You know, mm-hmm. I'm stuck in traffic. I can't pick up my kid at 5 p.m. So what is the protest actually doing? Is it going to make the cop look at us any better? Like, what can we do besides, I think, the protest? I don't know if the protest really worked.
Right. Well, first of all, we got to keep in mind that the black person is normally dead before the ambulance shows up to get them in the first place.
True.
So let's be clear on that. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, Envy. Protest is the first stage of any political economic struggle.
Right.
Protest is your marketing program to let the world know what I stand for, what's happening to mm-hmm. me, and what I want. Protest allows you to control the public narrative about your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Without the protest, the world doesn't know why you're doing what you're doing.
That's
so
real.
Protest is important mm-hmm. because it is your way to put out your message.
Gotcha.
So you can't do nothing without it. The problem with black people is there's nothing after the protest.
Right.
Do you understand? The protest becomes the goal instead of the means to the end.
That's what I keep asking. What is the solution? What's the next action? Like we saw.
Well, let me tell you what has to happen now.
Okay.
Because now we're in a state of crisis for black America.
Okay.
Three things black America has failed to do, which is going to keep this carnage machine in place, this police genocide. Number one, we have failed to publicly criticize and hold accountable the executive branch of the United States government, mm-hmm. i.e., President Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Despite all the killings, despite all the murders, despite an unemployment rate and a dropout rate that is greater under a black president than it was under the two previous Republican presidents, mm-hmm. black people have remained silent. Mm-hmm. Obama has ignored black folk. In fact, we are the only so-called minority population in the country for which he has done nothing nor has spoken significantly for our issues. Compare us to LGBT. They got three laws under Obama. Three. That is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. How many laws did black people get under Obama to protect us from police genocide or even to improve the schools or to reduce incarceration?
Wow.
Zero. Okay, they got a Supreme Court justice. Latinos got a Supreme Court justice. LGBT got a Supreme Court justice. President Obama had the opportunity to appoint the first African-American female Supreme Court justice, and he chose not to act. It's not all his fault, though. We have created a context where the president can ignore black people and get away with it because we told the entire world when he was elected that all he had to do was just be black and we were fine. Remember?
Yeah, we didn't.
He doesn't have to do anything but be black. That is the worst thing you can say as a marginalized oppressed group in such a racist country as this, as to tell the world that the president The executive branch of the United States government does not have to be accountable for you.
That's for any head of state, though. Any head of state we elect, we need to push and make sure things happen.
But Obama is the first president out of 44, the first one from George Washington up, that has not had to deal with any sort of public criticism from black people. Mm-hmm. And if he leaves office without any, here's the problem. If we let Obama leave office without any condemnation from the black community, by virtue, you cannot hold Hillary or Trump accountable for what they do not do for black people, because you have now created a precedent where a president can come in for 8 years, ignore you, even with police genocide, and not receive any criticism.
Why do people make excuses? You know, and I was always mad. I was upset about this because I felt like he was our president, you know. And I felt like when certain things happen, I felt like he should be on the front lines because he's dealt and seen. And I'm sure he's been pulled over before. I'm sure he's been racially profiled before. So it kind of bothers me when I see a lot of these individuals get shot and killed, and you don't really hear much from them.
Exactly.
Even to the thing with, you know, when he flew back to go to the funerals and speak to the officers in Dallas, I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. But then I also thought, well, what about Baton Rouge?
Exactly.
What about Minnesota?
Exactly.
What about Ferguson?
He's not going to do that because President Obama understands something that most blacks in America do not understand. The first business of America is racism. Let's be clear about something. Most white people in America, okay, are also suffering economically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm white in a country based on white privilege, what is my claim to fame if I don't have a decent education, don't have a good job? For many white people in this country, their only claim to fame is the fact that I can say I exercise privilege vis-a-vis black people. Obama understands that. So America is held together by the fact that the poor white man understands that he still exercises a privilege that the rich black man does not.
And that's what Donald Trump is reminding them. Donald Trump is reminding all
the
poor white people.
Oh, Donald Trump changed the game. And let me tell you why. The United States power structure underestimated the impact of an unapologetically honest fool over the American electorate. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. In other words, Trump is saying to white folks, what white folks feel.
Poor white folks, too.
Yes, poor white folks. So you got a rich, wealthy white man appealing to poor white folks. You've never had that. But it's working because he is unapologetic. He's ignorant. He's a fool. But he's honest.
Mm-hmm.
And white folk can respect and identify with a white male who's willing to be honest. In other words, Donald Trump intentionally made sure he was the polar opposite of Barack Obama. Look at Obama. You ask Obama a question, you don't get an answer. You never get a straight answer from Obama. It's always, well, we got to see. Let's see what the Americans think. Now, go back to George Bush. George Bush told you what he felt. He was another idiot, but he was honest.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is honest. The reason white folks are not rallying behind Hillary the way that the power structure wants them to is because Hillary is the same old thing. She's Clinton all over again. She's Obama all over again.
Correct.
She's a Bilderberg.
Talking
She's politically
points.
Correct.
Yeah.
Her whole message is scripted. Trump's is not. So the issue now is, how do we engineer an election where Hillary wins? Because right now, Trump is carrying the momentum. See, remember now, people don't choose the president anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you want the people to choose the person you wanted. So the illusion of democracy continues to prevail. America is not a democracy. America is a republic. That's why when people pledge the flag, and I hope there's no black boys pledging the flag, but when people pledge the flag, they pledge the flag to the republic. The word democracy is not in the pledge. The word democracy is not in the preamble. The word democracy is not in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. The word democracy is not in any of the 50 state constitutions. So why is America called a democracy when it's really a republic? Because it is the illusion of inclusion, the belief that the people actually control its leaders when it does not.
So with that said, right, for as much as we know that America has a history of racism, institutionalized racism, systemic racism, why did Barack Obama become president? Why did they allow Barack
Excellent
to become
question.
President?
Okay, every president that is elected is given a domestic mandate and an international mandate. There's something they need you to do domestically. There's something they need you to do internationally.
Mm-hmm.
For President Obama, his
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are just about off the air. We got about a minute or so in the show. I hope you had a great time listening to the show. I want to thank my guest, Lisa Malden, for being such a great, wonderful guest. We have them all, folks. What can I say? And I'll see you guys tomorrow. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Father, open eyes that we may see to follow thee, Lord, grant us thy loving let all dissension cease. Let our faith each day increase and thank you.